Esther chapter 6 and verse 1. On that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of records of the chronicles, and they were read before the king. Well, my title for this evening is The Hidden Hand of God. We've seen the hidden hand of God throughout this book, but once again we'll see it working through apparently seemingly insignificant events. Yesterday we saw was an eventful day. Yesterday Esther had gone in to the king, seen the king, and obtained favor with the king. Her prayer had been answered. Yesterday was a banquet held by the king, held by Esther for the king, and Haman. There's another one planned for today. Yesterday was the day that Haman planned, followed the advice, took up the advice of his counselors and of his wife to have a gallows made to hang Mordecai thereon. And so it was a very eventful day. And having that knowledge that tomorrow he would get rid of, he would see the end of Mordecai, no doubt he slept soundly, because we read at the end of chapter 5 and verse 14, and the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. The disturbed man found a false sense of peace, a false sense of security, and he slept soundly, knowing that the next day his perceived enemy would be no more, and he would be removed. Little did he know what was going to happen at the end of that day. Well, one person who couldn't sleep that night soundly was the king, King Ahasuerus, King Xerxes, as we know him to be. He was having a troubled night, and it's quite unusual for him. As a king, he had all the comforts of life. He had everything. I'm sure he had a very comfortable bed, the most comfortable bed in Persia to lie in. He'd just been to a banquet of wine, which no doubt would have helped him and eased his sleep and made him sleepy, and I'm sure that would have affected him. But he can't sleep. He's disturbed. And we read here that his sleep, actually, it says, the meaning is his sleep fled from him. It's fled away literally. It's as if he woke up in the middle of the night, or very early in the morning, most likely, and he was wide awake and he couldn't sleep. He couldn't, he wanted to, but he couldn't. He could have called for the musicians. He could have called for some other means to soothe him back to sleep, somebody to play a nice lullaby for him, but he didn't do that. Instead, we read, he commanded to bring the book of records of the chronicles, and they were read before him. The book of records of the chronicles, well, this was like the annals of the kingdom. The events which had happened, anything interesting, the wars that had been engaged in, not only during the king's lifetime, but even his predecessors, all that would be recorded there. And anything of note, of interest, would have been recorded by the palace scribes. And this is what he calls for. And amazingly, and interestingly to us, it was found written that in that place, the thing that's read to the king is not about a great victory he's had or some other incident. Out of all the information and events recorded in those books, it seems this is the one that his readers, his chamberlains maybe, or his other servants, read to him. Verse 2, Mordecai, it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh to the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay her hands on the king on the king Ahasuerus. Everything is working together. Do you see? Was it just by luck? Was it just by chance that these things happened? That in between the feast yesterday and the feast that's going to take place today, this very night, the king cannot sleep of all nights. And then the book and that is brought before him, the fact that he asked for this book, again, is a providential act, and he didn't ask for the musicians. And the fact that his readers turned to this portion and read this portion to him, and he realized that the great favor and the great work that Mordecai had done for him. And all these things, of course, is not by chance. It's something that the Lord has done for them. Seemingly small things, seemingly insignificant things. He cannot sleep. And yet the Lord used all these things. His ways are so interesting. How wonderful it is to observe providence. How wonderful it is to observe the wisdom of God in providence. We cannot always see it at the time, but afterwards we can acknowledge it and see it. But in the very tiny things of life, the Lord moves in a very wonderful way. And it's interesting to note, talking about Mordecai and the way that he had been, he'd related the plot to kill the king. We mentioned it previously. He never asked for any reward then. He's never asked it for all these years. And here we see, even after the edict has come in, even after that law has come in, that the Jews should be exterminated and killed, Mordecai never uses that. He never tells Esther either to go into the king and remind the king, look, this is what I did for you. I saved your life. Naturally speaking, we would have thought that would have been a good thing for him to do. Go into the king, look, remind him, show him how I delivered. Maybe the king will change his mind or will do something to help us when he realizes the help. No, Mordecai is silent. He says nothing. It's as if he's leaving it to the Lord to intervene instead of using his own methods. Well, the king asks, what's been done? What honor, what dignity, what respect has been given to this man? Has anything great been done for him? He's done something great. He saved the life, my life. Has he been rewarded? And we read, he asked the king's servants, and they would have gone, they would have opened another book, because in Persia they also kept another book with a list of all those who were deserving of some reward and who'd received some reward. And so they went and checked that book and found, no, there is nothing that's been done for him. And of course now is going to be the time of his reward, as it were. But we can also draw a lesson, isn't it, for ourselves. We don't do things for rewards, but the Lord does keep a record of the things that we do for him. Even the very small things we do for him and his kingdom are remembered by Christ. And even a cup of cold water, he says, will be rewarded by him. If we give a cup of cold water to a brother or a sister, we help somebody in a very small way, even the Lord takes notice of everything that we do for him. On the day of judgment, we read, isn't it, in Matthew chapter 25, all these things that we did for our brothers and our sisters. And we said, Lord, we didn't know. What things did we do? And the Lord knows about these things. So we don't do it for reward, but the Lord does reward us. How does he reward us? Rewards us maybe in different ways than we expect. With joy, with gladness in this life, with a measure of contentment, with answers to prayer, with usefulness in our life. These are the ways in which he often rewards us. Well, verse 4, who is in the court? The king asks. Now, Haman had come early in the morning. Maybe he was too excited, very keen to get his plan confirmed by the king. He had to get the king's permission to take Mordecai's life, and he comes in very early, full of maybe enthusiasm, to see this plan carried out. And here we see him in the courts, in the court of the king's house. Sleep hasn't cleared his mind. Sleep often helps us when, after a night's sleep, we change our mind maybe in the morning. But sleep hasn't brought this man to his senses. He never thought, oh no, that's a terrible plan that was suggested to me. How could I even think of that? I should put it away from me. No, he's still up and he's still desirous to carry it out. Oh, verses 5 and 6. We see the king's servants, they go out, they see, surprised probably, that Haman is standing there in the court, and the king calls him in. Verse 6, So Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor?" Or we could put it in another way, in whose honor the king delighteth. Literally, that's what it is saying. And he wants to honor Mordecai, of course, but Haman thinks he's talking about him. He's thinking he's got him in mind. And he says these almost laughable words, and yet so true to real life. Now Haman thought in his heart, "To whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself?" And he can think of no other person, only himself. His pride has got so much the better of him that he doesn't think of any of the other princes. He doesn't think any of the other magistrates or the other important people in the king's kingdom. He's already thinking he's the most important person. He's already got so much. He's already had so much honor. He's still not content. And they say, no, a rich man, a proud man, never content, always want more. And he's a prime minister. He's got the king's ring given also to him. And yet still, he's going to ask for more. Maybe also the king is partly at fault here, because in a way, he's contributed to Haman's pride by elevating him to such a high position, by giving him such favors as he did. He fed his pride and his inflated his ego. All that bowing down, all that reverence that was given to Haman didn't make him humble, didn't make him thankful. It made him more proud. And now we see that his ego is even more inflated than ever before. But notice here, friends, what he says. Now Haman thought in his heart, "To whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself?" And there are two things here. Not only does he have, of course, a high opinion of himself, and he lifts himself above others, he has a great sense of self-importance, but he also thinks others think highly of him. And that's another kind of pride, isn't it? One thing to think highly of yourself, another thing to think that others also admire you and think you're great, and they think you're wonderful as well. So he's so full of himself, as we would say today. It's a warning also for us, isn't it? See how pride works. It's better, so much better, to be humble and to be content with what the Lord gives us, to walk humbly with the Lord. Verses 7 to 9. Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel, the king's clothing, the king's robe be brought, which the king has worn before, and the horse, bring his horse out, and the crown royal, and set it upon his head, and let this apparel and horse be delivered to one of the hands of the king's most noble princes. Let them clothe him, and then bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor.'" But all this, such a remarkable thing that he asked for. How did he come up with all that in such a short moment of time? One wonders. It's a very, very rare honor. Has he got aspirations to be the king as well? Because all these things are really for the king and the king only. These three things that he asked for. And if anyone else, any ordinary citizen or any other leader or political official was caught doing one of these things, he was considered a capital offense. You'd lose your life if you did one of these things. If you wore the king's clothing or if you sat on the king's horse, that is a very privileged thing to be given. You couldn't just take it upon yourself. Or if you wore a crown upon your own head. All these things was against the law. And yet, all these things he asked for. In Genesis chapter 41 and 43, maybe we won't turn there, but we read about how Pharaoh honored Joseph by letting him ride in his second chariot, and is also as a sign of elevation. And this is what Haman also seeks to do. Let this be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Well, Mordecai is shocked. Verse 10. The king said to Haman, "Make haste, take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken." Well, Mordecai, the Jew, Haman, the king says to Haman, how did he know that he was a Jew? It had been kept from him all this time by Esther. Mordecai commanded Esther not to reveal it. How did he know? Well, it must have been recorded in that book of records of the Chronicles there, that Mordecai the Jew had been the instrument of his deliverance. And that's a good thing. The Jew, that is, seed is sown. When he heard that, probably when it was read to him, the seed was sown in the king's mind for the Jews' good, for their favor. Oh, the Jew, he just heard, all that he's heard from Haman is the bad things. The Jews are terrible, the Jews are disobedient, the Jews are rebellious, get rid of them. Now suddenly he hears that a Jew has saved his life. And this is the beginning, of course, of the Lord changing and opening the king's heart to make him more receptive to Esther when she comes with that request that she was maybe reluctant to give at the last banquet, but will in the evening banquet, and he'll be more open to it. Well, Haman is shocked when he hears this. He is mortified to hear that this should be done to Mordecai. He's horrified by it. He's crestfallen, he's speechless, and he doesn't know. He cannot, I'm sure, believe his eyes. Oh, not him? Not me? You mean all that while he thought it was him? He probably could have borne it if it was another prince or another political person or somebody else in the kingdom, anybody else, but Mordecai? Oh no, that is his worst nightmare come true. And of course it's the Lord who is working. Verse 11, Haman has to do, he has no option, he has to obey the king. He takes the apparel, the king's apparel and the horse, and he raised Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor." What a humiliation for him. He had to walk past the king's gate, the very gate where everyone used to bow down and do him reverence except for Mordecai. And now the roles are reversed. Now Mordecai is on the horse, and this Haman is in that humble position, proclaimed, "Every one of the king's servants must have been so stunned." He has to walk past the king's gate, into the public place, onto the streets, that open place in front of the palace, and the most public place in the city it was, and he has to declare these things. Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor. So humiliating for him. And in verse 12, we read Mordecai after these things. But before we actually go there, what about Mordecai? What can we say about, how do you think Mordecai felt on that horse? Do you think he was full of glee? Do you think he's saying, I've got you, my enemy? No, I don't think so. I think he was rather uncomfortable in that position. I don't think he was happy really to be in the public limelight. I don't think he was happy to be acknowledged in such a public way and rewarded in such a way. I think he would rather have been sitting at the king's gate. We get an idea of this in verse 12, where he, as soon as the event is over, he returns back to his humble position at the king's gate. He doesn't ask for any further rewards. He doesn't ask for a promotion. He doesn't say, okay, I've done this, what else, what's next? No, he just returns to his humble. He's that kind of a person. He's content with what the Lord has given to him. He's not after glory or fame. Well, we see that he doesn't seek a personal blessing for himself, Mordecai. But quite likely it dawned on him that this was also a signal, a favor, that the Lord was going to favor him, favor the Jews rather, by this token of blessing. By so openly blessing him and rewarding him, it was a token of what God was going to do for the Jews. So Haman, on the other side, on the contrary side, he returns home in shame. And in verses 13 and 14, he tells Zeresh, his wife, and all his counselors, his friends, everything that had befallen him. And then a little bit too late, they said to him, oh, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, they knew he was of the seed of the Jews, because he would have told them these things a lot earlier. And then before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shalt surely fall before him. Why didn't they tell him that before? This is what they should have said. Don't fight against him, because you will surely lose. But instead, they say it now, after they've had some intimation of what's going to happen. They are so sure. They themselves can see that things are reversing. Haman is on the descendancy. Mordecai is ascending. And they also know how God has intervened. It seems they must be aware of some of the history of the Jews and how he had intervened on their behalf again and again, delivering them from their enemies, delivering them from Egypt and other battles that they had won. Well, they knew these things, but now it was too late, really, for them to mention them again to him. His doom is really sealed, in one sense, we could say, because we know what's going to happen next. Well, we, as believers, as the church, again, we are reminded that who can prevail against the Lord's church? Yes, we will have our enemies. There will always be enemies in the church, enemies of the church. Always be those who will rise up against us. But the Lord is for us. The Lord is with us. And if the Lord is with us as individuals, and if the Lord is with us as a church, then what need we to fear? God will rise. God will help us as we lean on him, as we depend on him, as Mordecai also did. And he will deliver us from those who rise up against us. We remember even with the Guy Fawkes and the gunpowder plot, and how also at that time there was that plot, you remember, to blow up the Houses of Parliament, a Roman Catholic plot to blow up the Houses of Parliament. And I won't go into all the details, I'm sure you're familiar with it, but Guy de Fawkes was discovered in the basement, I think it was, of the Houses of Parliament before he was able to carry out his plan. God intervened, God delivered this country, God had mercy on this country, and God also intervenes especially for his people, for his church. And so I leave you just with these few thoughts for tonight. Those who lift themselves up, the proud, will always go downwards. Will always, the Lord will bring them down. But those who are humble, the Lord will lift them up. And I just close really with one verse in Psalm 34. Or is it 37, I think it's. Yes, Psalm 37 and verse 12. The wicked plotteth against the just and gnasheth upon him with his teeth. The Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. Whatever the wicked plot to do, whatever the enemies of the Church of God plot to do, in a sense, the Lord laughs at their plots and at their schemes, for he knows what he can do and will do to protect and deliver his church.